Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guests Bonnie Glass-Coffin, Ph.D., and Don Oscar Moreau-Quesada. They're the authors of Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanism, Wisdom for Everyday Life. Don Oscar is the visionary founder of the Heart of the Healer Foundation, and we'll learn more about his story during the interview. And Bonnie is a internationally recognized professor of anthropology at Utah State University. I'm pleased to have them on the show. And thank you all for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Susan.
So, I enjoyed the book a great deal. I think it has a lot of really good wisdom for the time we're in, which we'll be talking about a little bit later. But would you both like to introduce yourself to the audience a little bit and tell them a little bit of how you got started studying Peruvian shamanism?
Well, I would like to open up this sacred sharing of our journey together to my beloved sister and collaborator, Dr. Bonnie Glass-Coffin, and let her start with our story.
My pleasure. Well, first of all, it's a real honor and a pleasure to be here, and I thank you so much, Dr. Susan, for the great work that you're doing and for having this wonderful show to be able to interact with audiences about topics related to how to live healthier lives. And I've been studying Peruvian shamanism actually for a very long time, since 1982. I had been in Peru since 1975 and was very captivated by the wisdom traditions contained in shamanism. And when I was in Peru the first time and asking people about shamanism, the story that I kept being told is that, well, men are shamans, but women certainly don't engage in that kind of healing practice. Being a woman myself and having some familiarity with the country and the people and being a bit of a pot stirrer, I decided that I was going to dig a little deeper and see if that, in fact, was really true. And of course, it wasn't. Women are very important keepers of the tradition. They have been the first priestesses in the Peruvian tradition and, of course, currently are working very hard to restore balance in the world through healing their patients of all sorts of illnesses. But there was a lot of folklore that suggested that women could only do harm, and in the tradition of the Catholic Church, of course, which had suppressed them so much when they arrived 500 years ago. So the women were a little bit reticent and coming forward, but eventually I ended up working with five female healers and was able to add their voices to the record. I wrote a book after my dissertation that Don Oscar picked up and thought was somewhat useful and started sharing with his students, and I had the great privilege of meeting him as a result of a phone call where he invited me to come back and share my wisdom about working with women at an international gathering that he was hosting for the Heart of the Healer Foundation back in 2005. And I met him and had a very transformative experience over that first weekend. Felt like I had really come home to a family that I had never realized that I had, and decided that I wanted to deeply apprentice with him and that I wanted to help bring his story to the world. And so that was the sort of beginning of my relationship with Don Oscar, and it's been a very fruitful and beautiful road, and I'm so happy to be able to say that the current fruit of that collaboration is this book. So thank you for letting me share that. I'm just so honored to be a part of this story.
It seems that it is very important for us to reconnect with our spiritual family. I had the same experience here in Atlanta. And, I'd lived many other places in my life and had not connected with people who were my spiritual family. And so it is very important to connect. And it seems that the energy of the group is somewhat healing and very good for bringing forth the, you know, the changes, group meditations, group ceremony, is very useful compared to trying to do all these things on your own.
Indeed. I would agree wholeheartedly with that observation. given that through sacred community, through the gathering of like-hearted people bonded by a shared vision, to borrow a term from Rupert Sheldrake, morphic resonance is so much more effortlessly achieved, and hence a field that is powerfully transformative becomes available to harness and transmit beyond the gathering of the community into the anima mundi, or the world soul, that is at the foundation of all shamanic work, and entering into relationship with a soul-infused universe, realm, experience of what it means to be human. One is able to be of service in a healing fashion and a catalyst for the restoration of wholeness within individuals, groups, and our planet as one. So I'm in total agreement with what you said, Dr. Susan.
And Bonnie, as an anthropologist, you probably are familiar with Margaret Mead's quote about a small group of committed I don't know the exact quote, but do you know which one I'm talking about?
Absolutely. I don't remember the exact words either, but paraphrasing, basically she said something like, never doubt that a small group of committed citizens can change the world, for indeed it's the only thing that ever has.
And I think that is
quote
how...
That really inspired me, yes.
Right. And what Oscar just said was how it happens. It happens via the morphic resonance. And I think that we come back again and again in these soul group families in order to make the change at certain energetic times that are very important, you know, be it the Renaissance or the American Revolution or the great changes we went through in the 90s where spirituality emerged, changing everything. I think that we just come back again and again to insert meaning and insert guidance and rediscover. And Don Oscar, you said so beautifully in this book that it's really a question of remembering who we are and why we're here. That's important. That's very important to understand. We're not really bringing in new information. We're just remembering what we always knew.
Certainly. It's a process of rediscovery, of reconnection, and that's the true term of religion, or religio, of a relinking, a tapping back into the one source, to that ultimate ground of being that is the origin of all ebb and flow, all pattern, cycle, tonality, and pulse within the universe. And hence, that's what we mean by being adepts at the perennial wisdom that existed before and shall continue to exist in the Akashic field way after we have made our soul's progress here on planet Earth. In other words, the remembering is coming into membership, reclaiming our participatory experiences as medicine people, as teachers of love through the way we live. And that's what the Pachacuti Mesa tradition of cross-cultural shamanism endeavors to do within our sacred communities. And it was such a deep honor to know that there are intelligences orchestrating the coming together at various pivotal moments in the historical evolution of humankind on this planet. As you well said, these axial periods, these moments of great planetary evolutionary leap of which we are experiencing at this present moment. And on a small scale, the coming together of Bonnie and myself, of male and female, of anthropologist and Kamaska Curandero, of the within and the without, and of the mind and of the heart, which we both share qualities of in such a balanced, harmonious manner, allowed the fulfillment of a vision I had for the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, which it would be a vehicle for the reclaiming of the rightful medicine place of women within the transformation of society and of our global culture. And I could have never done it without Bonnie's beautiful collaboration. So thank you, Bonnie, again.
Thank you. It's been my privilege and my honor. And I couldn't agree more about just the role of women as the nurturers, as the ones who hold so many levels and who also seem to be imbued with the patience to wait for the right timing and the right moment, and that moment is now. And as Don Oscar said, one of the things that I have really appreciated about this collaboration, of course, we all carry pieces of all of the opposites within ourselves. And, you know, in working with him, especially in the early days when I was sharing some of the writings that I had done about the particular approach to illness and healing that the women I worked with in Peru shared with me, and to just see it resonate with him and say and hear him say, yes, this has also been part of my life experience, to see that awakened divine feminine within Oscar as I could see the awakened divine masculine within myself. It's just been beautiful to be able to feel that balance within ourselves, as well as to be able to hold those opposites in a way that are not that are not opposite, but rather part of a continuum that holds its own resolution and the you know, resolution of paradox within itself. It's been a wonderful, wonderful collaboration that feels like it's been so much larger than just our two spirits. So I'm just grateful to be a part of it.
Now, in the book, you talk about a time that we're actually in now where there's a transformative energy coming in. Would you like to talk about the name that this is given and the meaning behind that name and what your understanding is of what we're in right now?
Well, I believe you must be referring to an ancient Andean mystical understanding of Pachacutis, of world reversals, cosmic transformations.
Right.
And these cosmic eras or world cycles are ubiquitous in most of the ancestral teachings of the way the earth is harbors human life since time immemorial. So it's nothing really new. It just seems like it's come upon us without too much anticipation or preparation, and hence that's why sometimes it's necessarily disturbing. And, you know, it's a shake-up of the established consensus reality, and we're experiencing that on a global level. The term we use for that is the Taripaipacha, what the era that we're coming into is the era of re-encounter, of remembering, of coming back together. And our prophecies refer to this as the time in which people from all ideological persuasions, cultural backgrounds, and skin colors will break bread together at the table of the Pachayachachik, the world teacher, which is oneself, one's awakened self, capital S, which is a mirror of the universal self, which is the Teksemuyo. And so when the universal and the individual come together, nourishment in the form of mana descends from the celestial realms and feeds the people who until then were hungry for a spiritual connection that organized religion and other forms of fundamentalist approaches to seeking purpose and meaning through a religious life have not yet fulfilled. Hence, shamanism's relevance as a vehicle for that spiritual path, as a sadhana in this time and this age.
And could it be, Oscar, that when we are all connected via this energetic connection, that we will behave differently, we will have different values, and thus the problems of the world will drop away?
Well, that is a very, cherished outcome of this remembering that we are currently involved in. Yet I refrain from wanting to be predictive of the outcome, for the Great Spirit has an agenda of its own that is sometimes necessarily contrary to our most elevated and noble aspirations for humankind. So I remain fully present in the now and teach love by the way I live, and understand that by doing that with integrity and with clarity of purpose, I will be a catalyst for that to be replicated in the lives of others. And I do see what you have mentioned, Susan. I do see a coming together at a whole new evolutionary level of what it means to restore sacred trust between humankind and the natural world, and hence elevate the entire planetary global consciousness to its rightful place within the intergalactic field that has guided the evolution of souls throughout the created universe. And I use these terms poetically and in a very visionary, expanded state, with conscious intention that your listening audience may also join the current of transformation that is available.
There's a quote on the back of your book that I'd like to read for the audience. It's Buckminster Fuller, reminds us, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the old model obsolete. Would you like to comment on that?
Bonnie, would you like to address Bucky's
Sure, I would love to. One of the things that I so love about this book is exactly the fact that the wisdoms that are within it actually do provide both a template and a set of tools for being able to create that new model, for being able to create a model in which we first trust soul, in which we recognize that we are completely aligned to the beauty of the present moment, and we reclaim ourselves as a portal between worlds. And as we open up and remember that soul connection, then we can move forward with all of the other tools that are presented in this small text to be able to consecrate our earth walk as sacred, consecrating ourselves as divine, consecrating every footfall that we make as being part of a beauty walk. And through that original aligning and then that consecrating, then together we come together with other people of like minds, and we begin to compose rituals. One of the things that I love very much in listening to Oscar's story as we were collaboratively putting this together was the remembering that he had about the sacred beings that came to him in a moment of a very deep, both personal and life-risking angst, if you will, when he was actually succumbing to death, and these beings came to him and said, Remember the rituals. Remember the rituals. Remember the rituals. And that's one of the things that, Native peoples throughout the history of our planet, Indigenous peoples throughout the history of our planet, have come together as communities around rituals that honor the cycles and the pulses and the natural models of the planet. And it is in coming together through these rituals that can only occur once we recognize who we are and once we align with that great purpose that is beyond us, that we in fact can create that sacred community that is built around love for ourselves, for one another, and service for our planet. And each of the five chapters in this book create both the lay the template as well as providing the tools to reclaim and remember that model that is inherent in ancient wisdom traditions throughout the world, which is exactly what Buckminster Fuller is referring to, and exactly what makes this tradition a true tradition of shamanism. Because as I tell my students in my classes, you know, the difference between a shamanic healer, who is one who intercedes between the worlds of the seen and the unseen on behalf of a human community, on behalf of a planetary community, the difference between a shaman and a psychopath is really that service to community and that being willing to bring these messages back, which often the modern world says, you know, we hear voices, we see spirits, we have a very different way of viewing the world. We must be crazy. But in point of fact, what we've done is we have opened to the possibility and the potential of ourselves as walking between the worlds. And when we bring that back through practicing the rituals together, we bind our communities in a way that creates that morphic resonance, that creates that new model, and that restores the true meaning of shamanism to the world.
Would you like at this point to give some contact information, since you do have you know, information online to share with people, including the classes?
That would be greatly appreciated. I'd just like to mention that we encourage all listeners that resonate with what Bonnie and I have shared to visit www.heartofthehealer.org. That's heartofthehealer, one word, .org. That is the nonprofit organization that is a vehicle for the dissemination of the Pachacuti Mesa tradition of cross-cultural shamanism that is at the root of creating these new models of interpersonal sanctity, really. And through that state of consecrated grace as a human community, that presence alone reestablishes sacred trust with the powers, forces, and virtues of the natural world. And I believe what Bonnie had said before also has to do with the great danger of pollution of mind. As she mentioned, you know, there's a fine line between a mystic and a decompensated psyche, a mad person. The difference is that the mystic has a model, an interpretive understanding of the cosmos that provides meaning and direction because it's been sanctioned generationally and forms part of a path of wholeness, while the person who also taps into this vast universe of, you know, unlimited powers and forces without this map, without this model, such as what is the Pachacuti Mesa Cosmovision, they can become very, very confused and hence feel more estranged from the sacred dimensions of life than bonded to them. And that's the great problem we have right now with our mainstream medical approach to altered states of consciousness, to states which are labeled as pathological, when in fact they have the potential to be breakthroughs, rites of passage, initiations into a much fuller life that is animated by soul and guided by spiritual truth. These practices that are in the book, which you can buy, Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life on Amazon.com, and if you do buy it, that whatever funds are derived from that go straight into safeguarding these traditions and restoring our trust with the earth. You can see these programs if you visit heartofthehealer.org. Yet this book is something I feel that may be the same thing that the title of Bonnie's book that initiated my reaching out to her to collaborate in this first book of mine, The Gift of Life. That's what this book is. It is a gift of life and loving life. So that's what I have to say at this point, Susan. Bonnie, if you'd like to add to that.
Well, very, very well put. I just also wanted to point out that one of the blessings that I have had along the way in terms of this deep apprenticeship, that I really a 7-year apprenticeship with Don Oscar, was in learning the tools, the methods, the cosmovision of the Pachacuti Mesa tradition, and I'm eventually becoming an endorsed teacher of that tradition. And one of the things that your listeners will find if they go, or when they go and visit the heartofthehealer.org website, is that they will find an opportunity for those who are interested after reading the book in finding sacred community and others who are bonding together along this new path, this reawakened path. They'll find information about teachers of this tradition in every area of the country. There are these sacred communities that are coming together, doing ceremony, celebrating the solstices, the equinoxes. Every Wednesday night, there's a tradition that is something called the Wednesday Night Link-Up, where people come together, whether in etheric ways or physical ways, and celebrate community. And all of the information about how to connect in is also at heartofthehealer.org, at the Heart of the Healer Alliance website. So I would just say that. I also have my own website. I'm very committed to bringing these traditions through in a very perhaps unusual format, and that is in the context of my role in higher education. I see myself as bridging mind and heart in higher education, and listeners can learn more about that by visiting my website at bonnieglasscoffin.com.
Well, thank you. I want to mention something. You had talked about Oscar's initial, experience where beings of light appeared at the foot of his bed, and I want him to explain that a little bit more in a minute, but I was interviewing Doreen Virtue, who, of course, is an expert on angels and other celestial beings, and she said that that people who are destined to be spiritual leaders usually do have this experience. She calls it encounters of the fourth kind, where they actually are in the room with you. You know, it's not just a feeling of an angel or a feeling of a light being. And I had a similar experience when I was in college. I wasn't asleep. I just was in my dorm room, and I looked up, and there was golden light all throughout the room, the same light that Oscar talked about. And then I looked behind me, and there was a 7-foot warrior angel, warrior class angel. And Doreen said that that was my guardian angel who came to kind of shake up my agnostic tendencies. And of course, after you see a being like that, you can't really be agnostic anymore, as Oscar knows. And so basically it thrust me into my path as a you know, someone who is going to be studying spirituality, opening into these worlds, and then educating others. And so I would say that from what Doreen says, that this is a normal, natural experience that, of course, could be really misinterpreted as a, you know, a psychotic breakdown, but it isn't at all. It doesn't have that at all. So, Oscar, would you like to tell our listening audience a little bit about when you had the first experience with the beings in your room?
Certainly. Before I move into that, I just want to mention that subsequent or after that experience, which a long period of amnesia followed it, that occurred to me, the encounter with what I call the Shining Ones occurred when I was 10 years old. And the next time I remembered that experience was when I was almost 18 years old at the first healing ritual session that I was privileged to attend with my primary mentor, Don Celso Rojas Palomino, up in the northern coastal village of Salas. So there was a period of time there that I was completely clueless as to the significance of this visitation that occurred at age 10. That said, throughout history, you can there's ample evidence of various people that were had these encounters of the fourth kind, as Doreen Virtue called them, and you mentioned, Susan, it's a good term, that have been pivotal in inciting them, evoking in them, to convey and transmit their understanding of the spiritual universe in service of that awakening within all humanity. And so, you know, my feeling, though, is that it's an innate human capacity that all souls who have incarnated on this good earth come from a place where the Shining Ones, these radiant, luminous abodes, these bardos, these realms of consciousness, in which one self is a Shining One. And hence, when you have a visitation of any type from non-ordinary realms of existence within the great aesthetic continuum we call creation, they are just experiences of witnessing oneself as transfigured into the light. They are mirrors of what one is capable of being on Earth and throughout many other planes of existence. That said, I'll go into the story, if that's still something you would like me to do, Susan.
Yes, please.
So, I was suffering from very severe asthma as a child, which required me to be taken out of the very humid coastal sea level area of Lima, Peru, the capital where I was living at the time, and missed fifth grade entirely because of that, to a place in the highlands known as Chosica in the central highlands, and it's about 11,000 feet in elevation. And I could breathe better there rather than have to be on IV dexamethasone and cortisone to be able to breathe, which was the case before I moved my residence. And I was there with my mother alone. My father was working in Lima. He would commute on the weekends to come and visit us. And I experienced an episode of severe hypoxia, closing down of my breathing. It's all articulated beautifully in the book, by the way. Everything we've been speaking about on this interview is articulated in a manner that's very accessible, and you can read it repeatedly and find various levels of understanding within it. So I encourage anybody to read the story in its fullness in the book. And I started to slip away and lose consciousness and vaporize and literally disappear, and I was going and leaving this earth plane. And I heard my name, my nickname at the time, being called out in the distance, and I came back into my body with a jolt. I'm summarizing this, of course, and I could, through my slit eyes, visualize these shimmering 7 foot, as a matter of fact, 7 foot tall, that's my,
right.
That was exactly my calculation, of
yeah.
Beings, luminous beings standing, the one flanking me to the left, one to the right, and mm-hmm. one in the center. And they proceeded to intervene within my karmic path, within my earth destiny, and reveal to me various things that would occur throughout my young adulthood and my later life. Everything from the marriages I've had to schools I would go to, the crisis I would experience, the teachers I would encounter, and the rituals that I would remember. And after that, the one on my left bent over and did a classical shamanic extraction using suction through the lips, put his lips down into my chest, and just, it was an interminable extraction by suction, and my asthmatic condition from then on was never again part of my life. So mm-hmm. my father, who was a physician, when he saw me fully restored, could not believe it. Took me down to the experts in Lima. They verified there was no more asthmatiform condition that I was carrying. And that encounter, I became totally forgetful of until my first mesada, shamanic healing ritual with my primary mentor, Don Celso Rojas, upon which, in the middle of the night, in the total dark, out of his ceremonial altar ground, this luminous field of light started to emerge, and the three shining ones showed their full glory right there, hovering above this sacred ceremonial space, upon which Don Celso elbows me and says, "Do you remember them?" And at that point, you can imagine my entire universe, my entire concept of what was real and unreal was flipped upside down. And
yeah,
I said,
no kidding.
This is a path that I need to deepen my understanding of.
That's
I
great.
Hope that this helps.
Well, it is, because it occurs so frequently, and in terms of awakenings, I think that there is some evidence that this realm is probably more real than the world we live in, which is, from my understanding, more a construct and illusionary and always changing. So perhaps where they come from, things are more eternal, things are more constant, and what we're really living in is the dream. I think that is what I got out of it. So, you know, we're in a less real and permanent situation within this dimension. And it's good to remember that we really come from another place.
I would agree, and anyone who is an adept at shamanic journey work or psychopomp travel, meaning being able to access these other realms of more refined vibrational frequency and the numinous realms. What I have found, Susan, is the difference is that there are far less filters that are conditioned by belief, by the culture that we find here on Earth, or by, you know, social expectations. So with less filters, one tends to be deceived less and learns great discernment as to who is your ally and who will keep you still sleepwalking, if you get my drift. So yes, encounter with these otherworldly states of consciousness are fundamental as evolutionary springboards for humanity to attain liberation from the ego mind and the necessity to control and seek approval outside of oneself.
I think we're in the process of remembering who we really are, what our relationship is to one another rather than what we think it is, and thereby with this new remembering can reframe things so that, like I said, our problems aren't really problems anymore. They're, because of the reframing of the how we understand things, we can see some behaviors that really haven't caused anything but pain and suffering, and you know, concentrate on new behaviors that will bring in more knowledge and information. You talk in the book about the Akashic Record. If all things really are known in this realm, we really should be concentrating on bringing in the answers to our problems directly, you know, not just chance experiments and, you know, the slow scientific experimental process, but we should be bringing in that information directly and going on a shortcut to, you know, getting the pollution and the environmental threats and the social threats resolved.
I'd like to open up the space for Bonnie to respond, and I'll be glad to compliment if necessary.
Well, just Susan, as you were speaking, I was reflecting on on an academic article that I recently wrote for a journal, the International Journal of Transpersonal Studies, which is actually going to be released here just after the first of the year. And it's an article about the way that, going back to what you were talking about, living in the dream and living in the illusion, how in the so-called modern world for the last 200 or 300 years, we have, I think, largely been deluding ourselves to believe that which we, you know, see and hear and smell and taste and feel is all that there is. And in anthropology, this becomes relevant for me because, of course, one of the things that anthropologists, cultural anthropologists particularly, talk about doing is really listening deeply and taking at face value the truth of the stories that Indigenous peoples tell us, the truth of the wisdoms about our relatives who don't walk on two legs, right, about our relatedness with the rest of the world. And in fact, those are the stories that people have been telling anthropologists for the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. And yet, even in my discipline, there has been a tendency to contextualize those stories and say, well, those stories make sense for those people in that context, but we're mm-hmm. not going to pretend that they're really real. There is this modernist agenda that limits our perspective about what reality is, and I think that is also shifting, thanks in part to, as you mentioned at the beginning, you know, the particular moment in which we find ourselves, where finally the modernist agenda is recognizing, or at least some of us are beginning to recognize, that this 200 or 300 years of history of the way that we've been talking about the way the world works is very, very small in comparison when we talk about time frame with the hundreds of thousands of years that we have, or the tens of thousands of years, even if you want to be very conservative, that where we have evidence of people from other places, of Indigenous peoples, of Indigenous wisdoms, who've been telling us a very different story. You know, among the Shipibo people, for instance, there's a very, very deep understanding that the dream, the world of the dream, the world of our sleeping, is the real world. And the world of our waking is the illusion. And that's true in so many places of the world where mm-hmm. where people's the first thing they do in the morning is they wake up and they tell each other their dreams in order to connect in with what is real before the illusion of the day sets in. And so mm-hmm. again, so happy to be living in a place and a time and to be able to be part of the story, even in my anthropological community where I'm writing things and saying, hey, you know, maybe it's time for us to drop the as-if qualifiers, the so-they-believe qualifiers. When we talk about indigenous wisdoms and indigenous peoples and actually open our minds and our hearts to the awe and beauty and wonder of wisdom traditions that are being shared with us all of the time. And one of Oscar's great gifts is to have been able to take the nuggets of so many of these wisdom traditions and package them in a way that can really provide a catalyst for people in our own time and space who are very sleepy, and the sleepwalk is very hard to move out of until we actually open our hearts to ancient ways that are continuing to be shared with the modern world, and that he has so eloquently captured in this text, so that we can place in context the last 200 or 300 years and remember ourselves as part of a human family that just goes back so much farther. And the more I know about indigenous peoples and indigenous wisdoms, and the more that I can see the reality and the truth in this, I haven't had the same kinds of angelic presences in my life that you describe and that Oscar describes, but I have definitely felt the call to be part of the wave of people who are providing tools to be able to open our eyes to that perspective of looking at ourselves that is around us all of the time, if we simply are willing to say, I don't know it all, I can unlearn what I've been taught, the unknowing is what is true, and I can awaken to who I really am.
One of the things that got my attention, I actually interviewed him on the show, plus he was recently on Coast to Coast. Michael Cremo, an archaeologist, has brought forth information that there are like relics and artifacts, mostly jewelry and like little bowls and things that are carbon dated, because of what they were found in, to be 1 to 3 million years old. Well, if we're finding relics on the earth that are actually 1 to 3 million years old, then that's direct evidence that there were probably visitors, extraterrestrial visitors to the earth during that time, that is actually mentioned in your book. So that's some real physical evidence that would point to the fact that we probably do have extraterrestrial and much more advanced extraterrestrial help that has been coming to this planet for some time. Oscar, would you like to comment on that and how that fits in with the shamanism that you've been exposed to?
Certainly, and I'd like to begin my response by mentioning that, yes, Michael Cremo's work has brought forth some substantive evidence at the physical level, and it's a good springboard, a good stepping stone. Yet back to what you mentioned in terms of the need for tapping into the Akasha, to the Akashic field, to move beyond our need to be fixated with the physicality and reduced third-dimensional proof of the existence of intelligent life on this planet, not only tens of thousands, but maybe a million years ago, and to find the spiritual implications of the visitation by star relatives that have been depicted since Paleolithic times within cave walls and temple sites. And throughout the world, there are profound core traditional ceremonies to reestablish contact with our star relatives. That is a given, and Bonnie mentioned her experience with indigenous cultures that live that reality, and that it's not necessary to make it into some sort of repeatable scientific experiment that can change the mindset of academicians. So what I'm getting at is this. The Dalai Lama once was asked, you know, what do you think of extraterrestrials? He said, they're fine, thank you. That was his response.
That's great.
So if you understand that the word akasha in Sanskrit, if the Sanskrit means ether, if you want to be reductionistic, you can compare a reductionistic with a purpose. You can compare akasha to the Higgs boson condensate, the fifth state of matter, right? Mm-hmm. That fluid, that effluence that is behind, that has been propelled forth, that dark matter, that stuff that is at the basis and more present than any other form of matter. It's that cosmic background radiation that has been coalesced into this ocean, this sea of presence, this ultimate ground of being. That's what akasha is. And it's available to anybody who closes their eyes and goes into the dreaming. And it's not about dream time, for it's not a temporal nor, you know, a spatial experience. It is an eternal now. And opening up oneself in whatever way one knows how to, by simply following one's breath or by doing elaborate rituals to access encounter with soul realms, within that void, within that spaciousness, what the Buddhists call sunyata, or empty fullness, there is a remembering. And the remembering is love.
Mm-hmm.
For everything that we find on this planet, the remnants that Michael Credo talks about as physical evidence of visitation, to the most majestic temple sites and venerated landscape shrines throughout the world, are a result of the impulse of love. Anything that is not done with that impulse will create confusion.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Well, we're coming up on the end of our hour here. I'd like you all to have the opportunity to present your contact information again, and if you have any closing words of wisdom for our audience, I'd appreciate that as well.
Bonnie, would you like to take the opportunity to say a few final words?
Again, the best way to contact me is through my website, which is bonnieglasscoffin.com. And I would just like to say that it's about love. It's about love. It's about love. And I would end by using a benediction that I use every time I'm in ceremony, which is a Quechua benediction, Pachis, 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 for all my relations. Thank you.
Yes, you say, yes, you say, huh? Thank you, my beloved sister. And once again, I remind everyone to please go to Amazon.com and pick up Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life. If it touches you and you find it in your heart to offer a review, that would be very helpful to getting this work out and continuing its role as a catalyst for evolutionary transformation that is in alignment with the prophecies of our ancestors. That would be very, very helpful. Thank you. Amazon.com, Lessons in Courage. www.heartofthehealer.org, you will find a series of opportunities to join our sacred community of Pachacuti Mesa carriers and also find apprenticeship opportunities, whether you are a novice or whether you are an adept of these traditions. There will be opportunities for you to grow and to become a servant of the light and a vehicle of love on this good earth we call Pachamama Gaia. Thank you, Dr. Kolb.
Well, thank you, Bonnie and Oscar. I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today. We've been interviewing Bonnie Glass-Coffin, PhD, and and Don Oscar Miro-Cusada, both authors of Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanism, Wisdom for Everyday Life. And the book has a lot of great information about spiritual practices that will be very useful in this coming transformation. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Dr. Susan.
Thank you deeply.
Next week on Temple of Health's radio show, Becky Chambers will be talking about whole body vibration, the future of good health. And on the 4th of January, Don Mardak will be speaking about spiritual healing for today, tomorrow, and beyond. I want to remind listeners that they can contact us at info@plastikos.com, P-L-A-S-T-I-K-O-S, that's the plastic surgery company, and get an electronic or a regular mailed newsletter that has the radio shows, the events. We have Noetic Science the third Thursday of every month and a Millennium Healthcare integrative program as well monthly. And there's going to be some exciting new developments that will be in the newsletter. So if you would like to partake of that, just leave your information at info@plastikos.com. This has been Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.